Governor Holcomb postpones non-emergency surgeries. Curtis Hill and Todd Rakita asked the Supreme Court to hear a case to overturn the election. Plus, Mike Braun refuses to acknowledge Joe Biden as president-elect and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 11th, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Governor Eric Holcomb said Indiana hospitals must postpone or reschedule non-emergency surgeries for the next few weeks as COVID-19 surge worsens statewide. From at least December 16th to January 3rd, Holcomb's order cancels elective inpatient surgeries that would have been done in the hospital. State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box.
The decision to postpone non-emergent hospital procedures reflects the fact that our hospital systems are stretched to the limit.
Holcomb is also barring local health departments from waiving social gathering limits imposed by the state. So, for instance, in counties experiencing the worst COVID spread, it's 25 people or less with no exceptions. In the second-to-worst category, orange, on the state's color-coded map, it's 50. Yet attendance at K-12 extracurricular events or pro and college sporting events in orange counties can be much higher, 25% of the arena's capacity. Holcomb says that's because state data shows spread is happening in social settings like parties, weddings, and funerals.
We are picking and choosing. We're trying to do that intelligently, and we're letting the data drive those decisions.
Holcomb's latest COVID-19 executive orders run for the next few weeks. Will Holcomb's latest actions help turn the tide in the fight against COVID-19? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Jennifer Hollowell, Holcomb has said for months, including literally just last week, that statewide, top-down, across-the-board measures won't work to confront COVID. So why is this going to work?
Well, I mean, number one, the kind of driving force that the governor has said from the beginning is we don't want to overburden hospitals. And so that's what this primary thing is coming out of. And, you know, he has continued to make decisions based on data, and a blanket shutdown, which some Democrats and others have called for, is not the answer. So I think this layered approach to try to make sure that we have capacity in hospitals as we are seeing a surge, and then allowing county by county based on the data to guide what social gatherings should look like is the best thing that we can do at this point. And frankly, I think we just have to stay vigilant for the next few months as we finally start to see some light at the end of the tunnel with the vaccine coming, and just be prepared. But I mean, I think the governor is being thoughtful and making decisions as tailored as he can with, you know, the ultimate goal of keeping Hoosiers safe.
To that point, Ann Delaney, with the light seemingly at the end of the tunnel, the first vaccine was approved by the FDA. We hope more get approved relatively soon. But as long as people refuse to wear masks or refuse to social distance, which we know is happening in Indiana and every state, are we just going to have to kind of hang on until that vaccine is widely available?
Well, I think we're going to have to do that in Indiana because the governor had a choice in September. The governor could have said, we're going to move from what we at that point, stage five, we're going to move back because the data is there that indicates it. He had an electoral choice and he had a health choice. He chose the electoral choice. He didn't want to have a statewide lockdown because that would have meant we could vote by mail, and that would have meant our turnout would have been greater. He didn't want either of those two things to happen, so he was willing to risk the health of Hoosiers, and he has. I mean, it is no accident that Indiana is at the top of the state's per capita in hospitalizations is because we've had no leadership from Governor Holcomb, no willingness to enforce it. I'm not saying you lock people up for not wearing masks, but the first person who's fined for not wearing masks, that'll have a ripple effect. Instead, the message that's been sent by the Republicans from the legislature to the governor to the president is a mixed message. That allows them to say, well, there's nothing to this COVID-19. I don't have to wear a mask. I don't have to socially distance. My president and my legislature tells me there's nothing to worry about. So therefore, you know, I'm on my own and I'm fine. And that kind of message has cost us thousands of hospitalizations and many lives. The projections now are that we're going to go over 360,000 deaths by the beginning of the year. And many of those were avoidable if we had had any leadership from the Republican Party, which we have not.
To the electoral question, we had record turnout. I'm not sure that we could have done, well, we could have done better, but I mean,
well,
record turnout is record turnout. Nikki Kelly,
yeah, okay, that's, wait a minute, Brandon, that's 5% more than we had before. The rest of the country was 20% higher. We could have had a higher turnout.
Nikki Kelly, I want to ask you about the very question that you asked, which led to the second soundbite we heard from Governor Holcomb in that package, which was the idea that we are making sure that local health departments in this new order cannot give a waiver for these social gathering limits. So it's 25, period, in the red counties, 50, period, 100 and 250 if you're in yellow or blue, and nobody is right now. But at the same time, all of these other places have capacity limits that are higher. Make that make sense for me.
I mean, I think Dr. Box did a decent explanation of saying, you know, an arena can hold 1,000 people. There are lots of entrances and exits, lots of, you know, bathrooms so that they can limit interaction and still have that. But it's still confusing. You know, why can I go into a restaurant with 100 people, which only has one bathroom, by the way? And that's just fine. But, you know, I can't go to a wedding. I recently had a funeral in my family, and we were limited to how many people we could have come celebrate his life. And so those things, I think, are hard for Hoosiers to grasp, even if there is some practicality in the reasons behind them.
To that point, then, John Schwanes, Anne Delaney talked about mixed messages between, for instance, the president and the governor, Governor Holcomb, who has advocated all of these things, mask wearing and social distancing, for months and months and months. This idea of social gatherings limited to 50 in an Orange County, but in a restaurant it can be more than that. Does that also send a mixed message to where, as Nikki just said, people are confused, and so it's a lot easier to just say, I'm going to do what I want?
I think the answer is yes. There are mixed messages, but this is a situation where we've been dealing with mixed messages from day one, back in March, when, you know, early on, you had federal officials, health officials saying, don't wear masks. And then it was, do wear masks. And then it was, you know, it's just been and then we've, you know, moved through the phases, the stages of recovery. And then now we're sort of back again in many states. So yeah, mixed messages abound, but I'm not sure that anybody necessarily is to blame. I mean, nobody's done this before. So everybody's trying to sort of find the best path forward. And I'm sure, and in terms of the arenas versus, you know, smaller settings where you have family together, large family gatherings and so forth. Do you factor in the economic impact and the vendor sales and the parking attendance and the secondary sorts of economic fallout that would come from a closure of those types of facilities? And yeah, there is probably a more tangible and more significant economic impact hurting real people if you were to do away with those types of gatherings compared to, say, large family gatherings. So, but I'm not saying that doesn't excuse your question, which is, or get to your question, which is mixed messages. Yeah, they're out there, but I guess that's what we have to deal with until COVID-19 is a thing of the past.
All right. Well, Attorney General Curtis Hill wants the U.S. Supreme Court to consider a lawsuit filed by the Texas Attorney General that seeks to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. That comes one day after this week, Attorney General-elect Todd Rokita also urged the nation's high court to hear that case.
The Texas suit aims to block results in four battleground states: Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. The lawsuit relies on evidence that has been rejected by other courts at both the federal and state levels across the country. In a statement, Curtis Hill says by taking the case, the Supreme Court would help ensure the integrity of the election. And in Todd Rokita's statement, the incoming Republican office holder claims millions of Hoosiers have deep concerns about the conduct of the 2020 presidential election. Numerous officials, including U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr, say there is no evidence of widespread voter fraud in the 2020 election.
Anne Delaney, simply put, do you think the Supreme Court is going to take this case?
No, they're not going to take this case. Those two are fools. Donald Trump is a loser. He lost the electoral votes. He lost the popular vote. You know, the only sport where having a lower number of what points or supporters or whatever is golf. And maybe he's confused about where he is, but he is a loser. And the irony of this whole thing with Curtis Hill, he obviously didn't read the brief, because the premise of the brief that they're trying to overturn millions of voters' votes is that if the legislature did not approve whatever minor changes were made in the election procedure to make it easier for people to vote during a pandemic, those votes are invalid. Well, if that's the case, then Indiana's primary is invalid, because if you'll recall, Governor Holcomb made the decision to allow mail-in voting without legislative approval. So if the primary is invalid, then the general election, which shows the candidates that vote that you voted on in the general election when the primary election is invalid, the general election is invalid too. But, you know, nobody ever accused either Curtis Hill or Todd Rokita of being a legal scholar.
Jennifer Hollowell, I'm not sure what other way to ask this, but is this lawsuit and the people supporting it, are they okay?
I doubt that the Supreme Court will take it up. Obviously, it's going to be a major ordeal if they do. The problem is, which Anne somewhat referenced, though I'll take issue with, that there were some states that did not follow their own election laws and did not go through the proper process. In Indiana, when changes were made, the election board made those changes, we followed the proper process. Indiana had a fair and accurate election. And in some instances, some state election officials outside of Indiana violated their own procedures and process. And so that is, you know, that is an issue that they should explore within those states and certainly and resolve that. But I think that even considering that, it's highly unlikely that those things impacted the election or would have changed the outcome of the election.
I want to make one point here, though. I want to make one point on that. I don't care that the State Election Commission voted that way. The premise of their argument is that the legislature has to okay the changes, not a board appointed by the governor or somebody else. It has to be done by the legislature, and that was not done in Indiana's case.
John Schwartz,
I believe at least two of those states were outside their own process. That's what I'm saying.
That may be, but Indiana's would be invalid under his argument.
John Schwartz, I want to ask you this. The lawsuit, the folks who were supporting the lawsuit, which at this point includes not only Attorney General Curtis Hill and Attorney General-elect Todd Rokita, but also 106 U.S. House Republicans this week also signed on to one of these amicus briefs asking the court to take this case. That those 106 House Republicans included Indiana's Jim Banks, Jim Baird, and Trey Hollingsworth in the 9th District. If the Supreme Court doesn't take the case, as so many people expect it won't, is this forgotten over time?
I think it probably will be forgotten, and I would agree with the rest of the panel. There's really no way the Supreme Court would take this up. If somebody wanted to grant certiorari and hear this case, I think Chief Justice John Roberts would throw his body in front of the clerk that's taking that document down the hall to be stamped. There's no way he, as an institutionalist, wants that stain on the court, the stain of partisan politics. And I'm sure he will do everything he can to prevent it. And even if he weren't there, I don't think there'd be a majority that would want to take this up, or even the necessary number to hear the case. Will there be retribution for those who are siding with this? I think in the moment, they're not real thrilled about it. And I know some of the networks, CNN and others, with the day that this was filed, strangely enough, there wasn't a single attorney general anywhere in the country willing to go on camera and talk about this and defend the action. There were statements released, which is a little bit easier, but nobody was willing to go on and defend it. So I think there's a sensitivity to it now, but memories are short in politics, and we'll move on. And I would just correct Anne, golf is not the only sport. As a former high school cross country runner, I know that's hard to believe anybody who sees my midsection now.
Timing, you're right, John. Timing.
In a dual meet, you wanted to get low score because that means your 1 through 5 runners finish first through.
Real time fact checking. Real time fact checking.
I doubt it.
That's right. You get that here.
Cross country.
No. Nikki Kelly, obviously, there's been hyper-partisanship, certainly at the federal level, for a long time. Does this, in some ways, asking essentially the court to overturn the results of a presidential election and literally throw out tens of millions of votes across the country. Does that go beyond partisanship into something else?
I mean, it would be obviously shocking and unprecedented. And I think it would actually take them in places they're not thinking about, the whole rule of unintended consequences, right? Texas itself made some changes to early voting that didn't go through the legislature. But, you know, no one's suing them because Trump won that state. So, I mean, they're sort of give and take. And if that's going to happen, you're talking about a whole new election. I don't think you can just say you four states don't count, but the rest of your states do.
Yeah. All right, well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is Joe Biden the next president of the United States? A question I never really thought I'd have to ask after the election. A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, should getting the COVID-19 vaccine be mandatory? Only 48% of you say yes, 52% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, on the same topic, Indiana U.S. Senator Mike Braun went on This Week with George Stephanopoulos over the weekend, and when asked directly, refused to acknowledge Joe Biden as the next president.
Braun on ABC repeated the same points he made to local reporters in a press call last week. He says the election process must still play out, despite states certifying their results, and called the coming Electoral College vote a threshold. He also says people, particularly the media, shouldn't reflexively dismiss the notion that any fraud occurred in the 2020 election, despite numerous courts and officials, including U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr, saying there's no evidence of widespread fraud.
Let's look at what the Secretary of State did not mention in Georgia. You know, the video where after a counting place closed, you see boxes of ballots coming out from underneath the table. I know that's kind of a graphic example, but...
Well, I have to stop you right there. No, that it wasn't mentioned because it didn't show anything improper. He's spoken to that this week. They said that was exactly the proper process for counting the ballots. There wasn't anything wrong shown in that video at all. So you're just throwing out a claim out there that doesn't prove what you're saying.
I think unless you scrutinize something like that further, or what about like
it was scrutinized
where there were a couple hundred thousand absentee ballots that got cast without a request for it. All I can tell you is if you don't at least give perfunctory kind of investigation into it, whether it's December 14th and what happens beyond, you're going to have a good part of the country. It's over 50% that view that something is amiss, and that's going to carry forward in terms of undermining a democracy.
John Schwanis, by repeating debunked claims about election fraud, isn't Mike Braun the one undermining democracy?
Well, he's not doing it any favors, certainly. I think if, in fact, more than 50% of the public does have suspicions, and I frankly doubt that number, but if that were the case, it's in part because of comments, unfounded comments such as that made by the senator. You know, he could look to his Republican colleague who's many years senior to him in terms of service in the Senate, John Cornyn of Texas. We were just talking about Texas, who says the election's over. Basically, you know, if anybody should have a front row seat on this, it's the senior senator from Texas. So maybe he could take a note from there. You know, this reminded me of the interview that George Stephanopoulos did with Mike Pence back during the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, where he asked, I think, 13 times, trying to get the logical answer. Couldn't get it then. I guess it's the old adage, you can, you know, lead the interview subject to the right answer. You can't necessarily get him to say it.
Nikki Kelly, whether or not the Senate, whether or not Republicans keep the majority in the Senate, which will be decided in the two Georgia races here in January, Mike Braun will presumably have to work with future President Joe Biden, who will be the president. He will have to work with Joe Biden if he wants to get things passed, presumably. Is he doing himself any favors on that front?
I think President-elect Biden will treat him with the same respect that he gives. And I think after a couple more weeks of this, it'll kind of all be in the, you know, the background and people will move on. I do want to say, obviously, as a member of the media, since he went after us, that, you know, we're not, I guess, dismissing them. Judges are. Elected, appointed judges with a lot more legal background than us keep throwing these lawsuits out.
And Delaney, Nikki just said something that I asked a question a little earlier today about, which is the idea of, in the coming weeks, if presumably the Supreme Court dismisses that Texas lawsuit, when the Electoral College very soon certifies or, you know, elects Joe Biden as the next president, right, is all of this forgotten in the long term?
I don't think it is. And the reason I don't think it is because Donald Trump is going to keep drumming it up. He's doing it deliberately. He's raising money. He has to pay off $500 million in debt in the next few years. And he doesn't have an income source that seems to be working for him anymore, since he's not going to be president. But, you know, you really think back, and when you think of the Republicans we've had as senators from Indiana, you know, like Dick Lugar, and then you get this. I mean, he's not only attacking democracy, you know, he is being a total coward. He is cowering in fear, cowering in fear of Donald Trump. And he's willing to put out the same baseless lies and accusations that are feeding distrust among Trump's supporters of the process. And they're doing it deliberately. I don't think it dies down, because I think Donald Trump, if he's still alive in 2020 and given it 24, excuse me, and given his health, I'm not sure that's the case, but I would expect him to run again. And what Thomas Friedman said the other night on television, the columnist from the New York Times, the Republican Party under Donald Trump is not fit to lead.
Well, Hoosier voters clearly don't think that way about Donald Trump and the Republican Party. But Jennifer Hollowell, if you're Mike Braun, does refusing to acknowledge the election results help you both in the short or the long term?
I don't know what, you know, I don't know what he was kind of considering in that interview, and I certainly can't speak for him. I can tell you that, you know, over the last several weeks, I've had several old friends reach out to me and ask me about this or that they've heard or seen on the internet or social media with regard to the election, and I simply tell them that we lost. You know, in my political career, I have spent quite a bit of time at the party and on various campaigns investigating voter fraud and registration fraud and absentee fraud and various issues. And there have been instances of all of those things in Indiana in the past, but they are very rare. And they also very rarely change the outcome of the election. Yeah. And I think it's a disservice to not just our voters, but others, to kind of perpetuate the notion that the election was stolen. I'm not saying this has anything to do with Senator Braun's comments, but these are the kinds of things that you see on the internet. And I just think it's not helpful to the process.
Yeah, on the internet and, well, national television, I guess. Indiana Republicans are asking Governor Eric Holcomb to use federal CARES Act funds to begin paying back money it borrowed for the Unemployment Trust Fund. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports they worry businesses across the state could get stuck with higher federal taxes.
When Indiana depleted a trust fund that pays unemployment benefits earlier this year, it started getting advances from the federal government to continue payments. But federal guidelines say that if the advance isn't paid off in 2 years, employers could start seeing higher federal taxes on each of their employees. State Representative Dan Leonard says it would unfairly place a burden on businesses that had no control over the pandemic or government restrictions attempting to curb it.
I want to make sure that unemployed Hoosiers get their benefits, but I don't want to put employers out of business by, you know, overcharging them and making those premiums too high.
Typically, businesses can also be forced to pay higher state payroll taxes if they lay off workers. But one of the first executive orders in the pandemic froze those penalties as long as there's a declared public health emergency.
Nikki Kelly, we've heard something similar from GOP legislative leaders and the Chamber of Commerce on this, have we not?
Yeah, and I just want to clarify, we're not talking about businesses paying because they're laying off people. What we're talking about is if Indiana owes money to the federal government two consecutive Januaries, then businesses would have to start paying basically an increase in federal taxes to pay that money back.
Right.
But that wouldn't happen until 2022. Now, having said that, we currently owe about $109 million. It'll go up a little more at the end of the year. And, you know, we have like $500 to $700 million sitting there because we've been waiting for Congress to give us flexibility to use it. So if the choice is it's going to go back to the feds, I agree. They should probably use it to pay off the loan so that we're in good, you know, good starting position for 21.
Yeah, well, that decision presumably will have to happen here pretty quickly because with failing any sort of extension, as we've talked about on the show in the past, we have to use those monies real soon. But that is, unfortunately, Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, please wear a mask, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.